This is Amber MacArthur, and you are listening to the Entrepreneur Podcast Network.
This is Enterprise Radio, and your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, your EPN channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who are having great success. This is where they share their latest creations, products, services, experiences, as well as business strategies and insights that can all help you build your business, leading to your business success. Today, we are speaking with Richard Lindenmuth, who has been an interim CEO in a number of industries with business models ranging from high technology and services to heavy and basic industries. He has 30-plus years general management experience in domestic and international operations and is noted for his comprehensive execution skills in both high-growth and distressed environments. Lindenmuth is chairman of the Association of Interim Executives and author of The Outside the Box Executive. Mr. Lindenmuth, welcome to Enterprise Radio.
Eric, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here today.
We're happy that you joined us and took out a moment to be with us. So to kick things off, what is an interim CEO?
You know, it's a question that we're always asked, even some of my family asks, what is interim? Anyway, I look at it very strongly as a leader with operations, finance, and marketing skills with experience in more than one industry or domain in fully integrated companies. In other words, engineering, design, manufacturing, finance, marketing, customer service, et cetera, not just a service provider or something like that, although there are applications if that person does have that some of that experience. Anyway, but clearly someone able to listen, communicate, organize, and establish priorities to allocate people and resources to deliver serious value in a very timely manner.
If you would, Richard, tell us about your time as interim CEO at Styrotech, a dying California farming industry company in the middle of a drought. How did you turn them around?
You know, it's really interesting. Let me just start with a description. Styrotech manufactures expanded polystyrene boxes or containers for refrigerating, storing, and shipping table grapes. For example, the value of this, the harvest in 2015, was over $2 billion. So it's not a small market, and many people don't really understand that the valley below Silicon Valley is a huge agriculture valley in California. And one of the major products that come out of there are table grapes, along with wine grapes and other things. And Styrotech actually has 50% of that marketplace, so it's not a small incidental business, quite important. And Styrotech had reached some problems, was actually, when I walked in the door, was entirely shut down. The parking lot was closed. The lights were off. There were nothing going on. Equipment was in disrepair. The state of California, in a very, very severe drought, had mandated that water that was provided from snow melt and rain and other things that came through canals that went right by the farming areas, and in particular right in front of Styrotech, that water could no longer be used, and that it was mandated that well water would be the only water that would be available for Styrotech to run a pretty good size operation. In fact, I mean, in general, Styrotech uses 100,000 gallons of water per day to create steam and expand the polystyrene and to be able to be molded into the boxes that it produces. In the initial startup prior to my arriving, right as they shut down, the existing production system just rejected the change from canal water to well water. In fact, was just rejecting 35,000 gallons of water per day. I mean, think about that in a severe drought. Oh, my gosh. Just not fun. So anyway, the result was that the people who were running the operation shut it down at that point, called in myself, and we started to put together a plan. The good news, you know, there was a pulse. I mean, 50% of a marketplace is a heck of an incentive for making money, and they had been providing a quality product here since 1972 with really good people, so that there were people who'd been here for a long time that knew how to make the product, that had never seen the problems that they were facing at this particular time, but they were profitable for a long time before this three-year aberration started, where no profits, losing money, losing market share, and what have you. One of the things about being an interim CEO is that you understand you're not like Khrushchev and come in and bang your shoe on the table and tell everybody what you're going to do. You listen. You put your ego to the side, and you know, I don't know anybody that's bright enough to have all the answers and as a CEO today, and I've been a CEO for a while. But you listen to people that have an interest in making, in this case, Styrotech back into success and to keep their jobs. They know how to do the jobs that they've been doing. And really, the CEO, if they listen carefully, the answers are largely there. They're not as articulate as you would perhaps like to have them. But if you listen well enough, you get some consistency and, gosh, we should have fixed this, or this has been a problem, or this or that, or here's one of our opportunities. There's an accumulation of lots of things. And then it's up to the CEO to provide the resources, establish some priorities, set some standards for execution, and basically lead the team forward. So that's exactly what happened at Styrotech. It was one of those areas where I was able to find a solution for the water in Tennessee, where I could rent some equipment on a trailer, literally, have it shipped out within a week, plugged into the existing system, and be able to utilize quite a sophisticated system quickly. And in water, that, good or bad, I mean, water has been problems elsewhere, and so that equipment does exist, and it was lucky that I had had some experience in agriculture or irrigation before, but not much, and most of it as a kid. Anyway, we solved that one pretty quickly, and then we looked at, you know, what the production issues were, what the cost of raw materials were, where things were before. Our challenge was that we had these things to deal with, but the challenge was that we also had only a few weeks before the production harvest started. And to convince customers that have to spend millions of dollars on your product, that you're going to produce a good product in time and that it'll be good for them and that they should start placing orders, was not easy, but we really have a good customer base out here, and it is a small farmer valley where you can get people in small meetings, and basically a handshake has a lot of value here, where in other parts of the world it has less value than it used to. So, you know, long story short on that, we were able to get some customers to bet on us that we would continue to do what we've been doing since 1972, although the prior 2 years or three have been more challenging. And we started producing within 6 weeks, and we started shipping within 7 weeks. And in 3 months, we were back to high margins, good profits, and basically the rental machine became a purchased machine, and we put in new water systems and new infrastructure and fix those kinds of problems that we didn't want to have. In fact, today, instead of rejecting 35,000 gallons, we are recycling the water that we use. And, you know, that's good for everybody, including the state of California.
You're certainly in the right place at the right time with all of your expertise. That's really impressive. Certainly appreciate your sharing that. Now, why do boards... Getting back to interim CEOs, why do boards facing C-suite upheaval turn to interim CEOs, and what can happen if they don't?
You know, those are hard questions, because usually the CEO leaves quite a gap. If they're not there, they're, let's say, hurt in an automobile accident, or they just haven't kept up with the times or the politics or whatever else. I mean, I used to say the two easiest guys to fire, or girls for that matter, are the CEO and the janitor, because neither one has a large base. The boards facing this kind of C-suite upheaval today, we're talking about a time when technology changes. I mean, think about high-speed broadband coming and where the telcos are today. Think about the social media. Think about all of the everything you think about with your customers, and they know about everything through the internet and what have you. You don't have 6 months to decide what a wonderful candidate will be. And yet if you make a wrong choice for a long-term candidate, you pay for it in hugely, I mean, unbelievable dividends both ways. So if you can avoid the vacuum in the C-suite in today's world and still be looking for the long-term candidate, but for 6 months or even 1 year or sometimes a little longer, you can bring in somebody who can fill the void and can quickly start bringing value to the table, who listens. I call it active listening in the book that I wrote. Active listening basically is in Wikipedia, basically says that when you hear something, you repeat it back to the person in your words and get confirmation that indeed you are talking about the same thing, so that you have absorbed the right thoughts, ideas. And what you find with active listening is that more than one person in the company, generally not the vice presidents. I will say that vice presidents have earned their position through experience and skills, but they've also earned a position where they no longer like to have their judgment questioned. So you need to reach below them. I always tell vice presidents, you're the elder council, like a tribe of some sort. Nothing will be done, no actions will be taken without passing them through your thought process. But we're going to get our basic listening posts at lower levels where people who actually are doing the work today. Then, you know, you simply start putting those kinds of things together. And as the board, you want to be transparent. You want to deliver things. There usually are things that you can, within 30 days or 45 days, you can make some small positive moves forward without jeopardizing things. I mean, there are no such things as interim decisions. All decisions are pretty permanent and have an impact. So in that relatively short period of time, you can deliver the goods, and over a longer period of time, you're basically enabling the people who've been running this corporation for a long time to do the things they think are right, and you're providing the resources in the right place. You do that because you do have the experience in several domains. You have been a problem solver. You have been a leader and a CEO before. You didn't get this without any gray hair. And therefore, you come in and do some things, including defining what the CEO of the longer term should look like, without allowing even a couple weeks vacuum of nobody providing leadership. So often people say, well, the CFO will be the interim leader or the CMO. Well, they have a interest in protecting their own jobs. They're not going to make major decisions and find out it's not necessarily the right one. So they're going to add to the vacuum. It looks like leadership, but it's not. They've got a commitment to doing the things that they do well. You need somebody who'll come in and can truly take charge without being, like I said, the crew chef who pulls his shoe off, bangs it on the conference table, and tells you what he's going to do. I hope that's kind of a good description of you don't want that void today. If I'm on the board, oh, my gosh. I don't just sit there and come up and show up for board dinners the night before and read my financials on the day of the board meeting. I go down and talk with people at the operating level, at the factories and marketing and focus groups and what have you. So I really have a feel and a knowledge of the company, but also the individuals have a feel for me.
Today we are joined by Richard Lindenmuth, the chairman of the Association of Interim Executives and author of The Outside the Box Executive here on Enterprise Radio, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. You can also follow the show on Twitter simply at ePodcast Network. Mr. Lindenmuth, what makes an interim different from other C-suite executives?
Well, I look at an interim as a kind of like a special ops Delta Force or a SEAL. They have training experience and they focus on getting results today. I often say, you know, when you have a real serious problem, you form a tiger team and you put your tiger team on that problem and they go right at it. But if there's no war or no fight or no major problem, the tiger team are the personalities that will pick on each other and cause as many problems as there were in the beginning. You don't need these guys every day, but when you have a vacuum of leadership or you have a specific issue that you might need to solve, and that includes, you know, let me make another kind of a little bit of a story. Acquisitions, Bain did a study years ago showing that 60% of acquisitions were failed. And the reason that they failed was they were not integrated correctly. They did not get the synergies that the investment bankers and the analysts had said existed in the combination of the two companies. Well, not many CEOs or boards have a great deal of experience in integrating acquisitions. An interim CEO does, just by the nature of what they do, the act of listening and the understanding of why and where the synergies are and being able to go get them. In fact, I used to use the analogy of the two mountain and one says to his buddy, you get the bear and I'll cook it. And you see the one fellow running through the snow with a grizzly bear trailing him closely behind. He runs into a cabin, dives out the window as the grizzly enters and says, cook it, to his buddy. That's kind of like a CEO feels like, oh my gosh, I don't do this. How am I going to get $50 million worth of synergies from integrating these two operations? Well, somebody outside who is an operational person who does the kinds of things that an interim does brings those kinds of skills to the table in those situations and does very well. And the PE guys who are much better at acquisitions and integration have a much better rate than the 60% that I said Bain had said. So again, the SEALs or the Delta Force coming in fixes things quickly, puts order into things, and allows that time to decide what your longer-term leadership needs to look like.
Certainly an excellent comparison. Thanks for sharing that. Lastly, what are some leadership lessons other executives can learn from CEOs?
You know, the interim CEO is, there's lots that you can learn. And most of us have scars from things that we learned. Or I remember somebody telling me at one time, choose your first boss out of school very carefully. Make sure that they're male or female, that they want to get ahead, that they are doing the things that you'd like to do, that you can see how you can be part of their team. And you learn a lot of leadership lessons working with your first boss. The other part is there was a fellow, Tom Peters, wrote a book, In Search of Excellence, and I always remember that he kind of coined the term management by walking around. If you sit in your office, you know, people can have an imagination of who the heck you are. You're not a real person. You're a CEO, whatever that is. So if you get out and walk around, go talk with vice, you know, talk with people at the factory floor. One time we had an issue of shipping parts to Motorola, and they were going to the wrong place. I went down to the factory floor with the shipping department, and for 2 hours I worked in shipping during the time when these parts were being shipped to the wrong place. I discovered a very nice lady, and I said to her, I said, I see you have a little trouble, you know, reading some of these things. She said, yeah. She said, I only went to the third grade. And I said, oh, gosh. I said, but your, you know, manual skills are great. Wouldn't you like to be on the floor? And she said, gosh, I've been trying to get up there for a while. And she turned out to be a wonderful mechanical-oriented person, putting together some very sophisticated electronic products. And we no longer had things shipped to the wrong place. So spending time on the floor, getting out and meeting people, being a human being, is a very, very strong leadership lesson that all of us could use a lot of time with. a lot of guys say, well, I've got so much administrative stuff to do. And I remember Harold Janine, the famous CEO of ITT, told me one time over lunch, he said, I don't get this MBA stuff. Master of Business Administration. If I had time to administer things, I wouldn't have time to do anything else. So I think that's a part of the management by walking around. There's no administration time. Get out and get things done and listen to what's going on. The other is there are no interim decisions. If you have to make quick decisions about something, I try to make things directionally correct so that they can be modified, changed. Reversed would be wrong because you want to fall forward, not fall backward. But if you're going to make quick decisions, make them with as much information as you can, but and make them directional so that you can modify and improve them as time goes on. And I think the largest lesson that I would go back to I really spent quite a bit of time thinking about is the act of listening. So many people have been watching the inventory build up or been watching the equipment deteriorate or not be maintained correctly or heard the customers say that things are moving in this direction or whatever it is. You know, go listen to them. Spend some time with them. Form, you know, and it's not really go down like a day with the CEO or something like that. Let's just show up and talk to them every once in a while. The first time you talk with them, they're not going to say much to you. But the second or third time, it's, oh, you're back. Oh, gosh, good. How's your golf game? Whatever it is. Oh, and by the way, you know, did you see the products on the shipping deck are just sitting there for a while? We haven't been able to ship them because? Or, you know, gosh, the lighting here is so bad, we're having trouble with the labels? Or, you know, it can be small things. They add up, and they're big. So active listening and then repeating that, what you heard back to them and then saying that, you know, Jane said the same thing. Or Julia or Harry, you know, I was talking to them and they're seeing the same things. We ought to all get together and let's sit and talk about what we might do about this. And they don't always know how to articulate the solutions, but that's why you're a CEO. You can do that. You need their information. And ultimately, you want, in the beginning, they say, please don't tell anybody I said this. But in the end, when you say, we all came up with this solution, and Harry said this, and Jane said this, and there's no fear back in this equation, the ownership that they take in making this whole operation successful is so thrilling and wonderful. It's the old advertisement where you see a little light bulb going off, and people said and said, ah, this is it, and I'm part of it. I can see how I can contribute and be part of this in the future. That is just a wonderful feeling that you get when you're a good leader.
Well, certainly some very valuable information there. We certainly appreciate your time today. Really interesting dialogue here. Tell our listeners where they can't get more information about the Association of Interim Executives and how they can pick up your book as well.
You know, the Interim Association is new in the United States. Interim started in Europe because employees were there for life, and they became contract employees, and they carry it a little bit further than we ever would in the United States. But the time with all the quick changes and the growth of companies, particularly smaller companies, I mean, if you grow from 10 million to 50 million in a short period of time, I mean, none of us have that kind of experience to get in control. So bring somebody in. Bring a coach in, a mentor. There are lots of things that an interim does. And I would go to the Association of Interim Executives online and, you know, look at the various stories that are there, make some contact with them. We certainly have identified and very credible leaders across the United States, and many of us who speak other languages and work frequently in Singapore or Lebanon, for that matter, or other places, doing exactly what we do in the United States, but very sensitive to the differences in culture, languages, and the differences in accounting and government controls.
It is interimexecs.com. www.enterpriseradio.org. Richard, thanks so much for being with us here today on Enterprise Radio. Certainly wish you all the best and look forward to a future conversation.
Thank you very much, Eric. I certainly enjoyed it.
And I did as well. We have been speaking with Mr. Richard Lindenmuth, the chairman of the Association of Interim Executives and also the author of The Outside the Box Executive, which can be purchased on Amazon. And for more information on the Association of Interim Executives, simply visit interimexecs.org. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Pick up our iPhone or Android mobile app for your mobile listening convenience. And once again, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio here on EPN. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.